Hi, my name's Gail. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is 5/13 of 78. And thanks for inviting me to your birthday party. That was beautiful. I'm coming back, so you'll sing to me, right? On mine, if I come back, will you sing that beautiful song? Okay, where are we at here with the picture? There we go. But that, I think I'm going to have to back it up because I think it sped forward. While I'm waiting, we're okay. I brought you some gifts. I gave to Andreas a video of all the sites in Akron, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And he'll be making copies for those who might want to see that. Some of you may not be able to ever travel to Akron, so I brought Akron to you. The front here, I'll leave the Four Absolutes pamphlet. In Asian, here's the Four Absolutes. A pigeon, we called him Pigeon in those days, of Dr. Bob. We got a document from him, and this is passing on from Akron, something that they were using very early on. A postcard of the stained glass window and some early pamphlets. Dr. Bob thought the big book was too hard for the blue-collar worker to read, so he had a gentleman in 1941 start writing some pamphlets. There are five of them here. They come from the group conscience of the first 100 in Akron, and I think you'll find them to be a real treat. And there was the card on Founder's Day. Can you imagine this? When I return home, there'll be 12,000 people coming to celebrate Dr. Bob's last drink in Akron. And for those of you that are coming over for the international, you could actually, if you have the time, you could actually come in for the June 10th celebration and still make it to the July 4th celebration in 2010 in San Antonio. So those are gifts to your group, and we have those in our office. You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for your hospitality. I've just had a wonderful stay. And I'm going to, in the time I have left, I want to tell you a little bit about somebody you don't hear too much about, and that's Dr. Bob and his lovely wife, Anne. As you know, both of our co-founders were born in the same state. I don't even know anyone from Vermont, but they were both born, and they were only about 4 hours apart. They did not know each other. Up in the right, you'll see St. Johnsbury. In the left-hand corner is Dorset. This is quickly what Dr. Bob's hometown looked like in St. Johnsbury, just kind of a quiet, cozy little town. His daddy was everything. His daddy was the judge, the state's attorney, the member of the state legislature, superintendent of the St. John's schools, director of the Merchants National Bank, president of the Savings Bank, Sunday school teacher for 40 years. Kind of rough shoes for old Dr. Bob to follow in, don't you think? His mother was church lady. She'd put him to bed at 5 o'clock at night. She was very, very strict. Ann Smith felt that it was mommy's fault that Dr. Bob drank. Just a few shots quickly here of the town. There's the church that he attended, but he got so turned off, like some of us do, by religion, that he swore he'd never go into a church again. There's his birth home. He first discovered a jug of cider by baling some hay. His town was a dry town, so it was hidden under some hay. And then he didn't drink again for a very long time. He graduated from St. Johnsbury Academy, and boy, did he love cars. We'll talk a little bit about that. So did his son, Smitty. He met Ann Smith at a dance. And he courted her for 17 long years. And girls, I promised you that he was handsome. Check this out. Graduated from Dartmouth in 1902, later becomes a doctor. He has a lot of trouble in college. He drank so much that he barely made it through. One time he turned in an exam, two exams, I believe, and it was totally blank. He shook so much. Daddy would come get him. His father was always trying to bail him out and help him. They'd doctor him up, and I mean doctor him up. This guy would get sick and be shaking and so sick that he would be down for like a month. I mean, that's how sick he would be. But he eventually makes it to Akron, to Akron City Hospital. And here's another handsome picture of Dr. Bob as a young intern there. He's the one on the far right. Look at that one. like a movie star. He's on the left here. Whew. For real, I look at this all the time. And forgive me. He sets up his office at the National, Second National Building in Akron, downtown Akron. His father has to send for him and bring him home in 1914. Here's Ann waiting on Bob 17 years. He finally shows up. And here she is as a young bride. And they get married. And she's from Oak Park, Chicago. And the marriage takes place in this home. They move into 855 Ardmore. Today it's open to you to visit. Have no idea what that was about. This is a picture of Ann Smith. She was just a lovely, sweet lady with a very melodious laugh. Both she and her husband had wonderful senses of humor. She loved to cook, and she wanted to do nice candlelight dinners for Dr. Bob. However, Dr. Bob didn't like nice candlelight dinners. He's kind of a practical guy. Wasn't much of a romantic, I guess. She once asked him to help take some wallpaper off the dining room, and he brought the hose in from the living room into the dining room and squirted it all over, and I think that was the last time she ever asked him to do anything. He wasn't real handy around the house, okay? So, but everyone liked him, you know? He was off to a pretty good start. They had two children. There were, the Sue was on the left, Smitty on the right. They adopted her when she was 5 years old, and they were both the same age. They wrote a book, Children of the Healer. It's no longer in print, but you can get it if you search and Google it. And there's a nice picture of Sue here. She will marry the fourth man in. And here's a picture of the kids with the dog, Roger. It was a pit bull, and he's buried somewhere on the property. I think, well, people probably come dig him up and put the bones on eBay, so you can buy the bones there. Everything else is selling on eBay. I think Dr. Bob thought the prohibition might slow him down a little bit, but really it didn't. He just managed to throw the bottles up on a porch outside the door here, and then to the right of the door there, that's the laundry chute. He would then hide them from Ann by hanging them down the laundry chute. Or he'd stick them in his Argyle socks, you know. Oh, you might not have known this. Did you know that Dr. Bob went back to study to become a proctologist? For some of you that might not know what a proctologist is, that's diseases of the rectum. That's why he was so good with us. I've already mentioned to you about the Oxford group coming to town. Dr. Bob's out of friends. He gets involved with them when they get their start at the Mayflower Hotel. I mentioned to you also that there was literature that they read. These are some of the things that we would have read in our flying blind period. We call it flying blind because we had no literature. No conference approved. There wasn't a conference until 1951. We know that they took morning quiet times, and here we have Henrietta praying for Dr. Bob and having the special meeting at T. Henry's home to help Bob and Ann share. Obviously, if you're sitting in a group of down and uppers that don't have your problem, it's a little hard to share, isn't it? That's why identification is so important. Don't know why I have Bill here. Oh, yeah, he comes and he meets Henriette at the Gate Lodge, and we've talked about this, so I'm ready to start some information about Bob, because when they meet for the first time, you know, Bob realizes one of the reasons he didn't get sober is he hadn't got the service end of this deal. That's how important service is, that Bill had understood that you have to help another drunk to get sober. So Bob learned that, and he said, of far more importance was the fact that he was the first living human being with whom I had ever talked who knew what he was talking about in regard to alcoholism from actual experience. In other words, he talked my language. You know, they became best of friends. And never really had an argument, but that does not mean that they always agreed. They were like yin and yang. They really were. For those of you that have heard some of the other talks, Dr. Bob's son used to say if it was up to Dr. Bob, AA would have never left Akron. If it was up to Bill, he'd have franchised the thing. It's really true, too. They began their morning at the house because Bill would move in. He'd spent several months in 1935 in Akron, and 6 o'clock in the morning, they'd get up, and they drank lots and lots and lots of coffee. I just read where they actually had the dog drinking coffee in the coffee dish. And Bob did slip one time, and he claims he got sober on June 10th, and that's when he had his last drink. And he always struggled. For some of you who may struggle with, for Bill, the desire to drink left right away. And for the other co-founder, he struggled all the time wanting to drink. And they both teach us a different lesson. Bob said, in the morning when I get up and put my feet on the cold floor, and this is after many years of sobriety, he says, I have a battle all day to stay away from that drink. You know, there were times in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous when I passed those saloons that I had to pull my car over to the side of the curb and say a prayer. Well, Lois eventually comes to Akron to check things out, and that is not Herman Munster. Do you ever hear of the Addams Family? Isn't that a terrible picture of Bill? I'm sorry, Bill, but it's the only one I have of Lois at Dr. Bob's house. She really can see when she visits. Now, Lois will start the family groups, but she actually observes Anne helping the wives. You know, Anne was already working with families, and she saw the wisdom in Dr. Bob, and the two couples really hooked up and got along very well. They get the third man, Bill D. We've talked about that. But I want you to know, when they tie Bill D. down, they tie him down to the bed, and Dr. Bob calls and asks if there's a guy in there, that they need somebody else to try to help to stay sober. It's very important. So she calls the nurse. The nurse, she says, hello, and he says, this is Dr. Bob, and we're looking for an alcoholic to work with. We've found a cure for alcoholism. And the nurse says, well, Dr. Bob, have you tried it on yourself? And listen to what he says to the nurse. It's kind of cute. Here's what he gives her instructions, just like a doctor. Now listen to me, woman. I want you to do exactly what I tell you to do. Exactly. Forget all those things they've been teaching about admitting patients. I don't care what your charge nurse tells you. Don't undress him. Don't give him an admissions bath. Forget about the urine specimen. Don't do anything. Do you understand? Nothing. I don't care if he wets the bed or pukes all over it. Don't change it. I don't care if he lies on the floor. Leave him there. Just one thing. He's gonna want a drink. I mean whiskey. Tell him he can have all he wants just as long as he drinks an ounce of formaldehyde before he has the whiskey. Remember, 1 ounce of each. Formaldehyde, then whiskey. I see some of you making faces. They used to use sauerkraut and tomatoes, too. He began working with a lot of alcoholics. He became the prince of 12-steppers. Bill did get sober, and that was the start of group number one. He liked to do a lot of slang. He would call Bill Abercrombie. He called women frails or skirts. He called his wife Anne little woman. He didn't swear. He would say, Godfrey Mighty. He called Henrietta Cyberling Henry, or Sister Ignatia Ig, or his wife Mama. Henrietta Cyberling called him the Rock of Gibraltar. Now, Dr. Bob and Anne were very, very humble, and they didn't want all this attention. He would just say, I just work here. When they had 40 noses sober, we've talked about what happens. They get to writing the book. And after the book is published and people find out about Alcoholics Anonymous, all the inquiries, we don't have a headquarters, they're all going to come into his office, and he becomes very, very busy 12-stepping. When the Liberty Magazine article came out, he was so excited because he said, you know, it looks like we might be getting a little bit respectable. In the Saturday Evening Post article, if you've ever read it, his name is hidden in this article. It's Dr. Armstrong. We've talked about Archie T. staying with the Smiths for 1 year as they nursed him back to health, and he would then leave and go to Detroit to start AA in another city. And here's what he said about Dr. Bob, that Bob said to him. Anne said this to Archie. She said, "Bob and I want you to know that as long as we have a home, that home will be yours too." And the house was always open all the time, people in and out all the time, drinking their coffee. Earl was another guy who came in, and Dr. Bob sponsored him. He went back to Chicago and started AA in Chicago. And here's Dr. Bob with one of his other loves, playing cards. He said, "If you can't be happy in this program, there's not much use being in it." Here's his son Smitty with his wife behind him, and here's what he told Smitty about his wife. "She's all right, son. She's built for speed and light housekeeping." She became a member of our fellowship. Here's the daughter Sue with the fourth man who came in Akron behind her. And here's Ann Smith, a page dedicated to her as the mother of AA. There's a replica coffee pot and her notes and the Bible that she read from. She'd read from the book of James. Bill would put on the coffee at 6 in the morning, but it was Ann who read from the Bible and led the guidance. And she would always conclude with, "Faith without works is dead, or God is love." They firmly believed in the four absolutes, honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. We had no 12 steps. We only had four words. That's what we measured the behavior by, were those four words. Did you know that there were 12 steps going up to Dr. Bob's house for real? Thought you'd like to know that. You can count them when you come visit, which I hope you do. This is just a picture to represent that the house was always open and people were meeting there all the time, in and out all the time. Here's a picture of a group of them. You'll see, I don't know if you've ever seen this before. There's Dr. Bob over there. Ann Smith's got a cigarette hanging out of her mouth. She didn't start smoking until very late, and she rolled her own. Bill's over there to the right with Lois. It's a nice-looking group of people. Lots of fellowship in those days. We've talked about King's School. And, you know, people tried to heap a lot of power and prestige on Bob, but he would always say, "Of myself I am nothing. My strength cometh from my Father in heaven." He would not want us to worship him or make him into anything else but another drunk trying to get along by the grace of God. He says, "I don't believe I have any right to get cocky about getting sober. It's only through God's grace that I did it. I can feel very thankful that I was privileged to do it. If my strength does come from him, who am I to get cocky about it?" If he was sitting at a meeting and a man used bad language, Dr. Bob would say, "You have a very good lead, young man, but it would be more effective if you cleaned it up a bit." Thought you might like to hear that. Blame it on Bob. If you speak more than 15 minutes, you're going to repeat yourself. No souls are saved after 15 minutes. The world's finest talks have been short ones. For example, both the Sermon on the Mount and the Gettysburg Address had been given in less than 5 minutes. With this point in mind, I also propose to give a short talk. In fact, I just did. He was a very calm speaker, and he sounded grateful. And sometimes he would point his finger or spread his arms, but he didn't gesture much. He always wore a suit and tie to meetings. When he came into a meeting, he was just another alcoholic. He would always pick some good points the speaker had made. Dr. Bob's remarks were usually kind, but if he thought a man was a phony, he would tell the man so. "When you are new, you should take the cotton out of your ears and put it into your mouth. Sit down and listen." "That's right, son, listen. But you watch and see what the man does as well as listen to what he says." These men showed you what will happen if you pick up a drink. They did you a favor, and when they don't pick up a drink, they show you how the program works. Either way, they do you a favor. There are two kinds of people to watch in AA. Those who make it, and those who don't. You have to sponsor yourself as well. You should stand back now and then and look at yourself and sort of laugh, then help yourself. Ann Smith was so kind and loving to the new members. That's why we call her the mother. She was always nurturing and making the families, the new people, feel welcome and comfortable. Somebody gave her some new dresses because she'd always just sock an old hat on her head and wear that same old dress. So somebody gave her some new dresses, and one of the members asked her, "Are you going to be wearing the dress to the dance for New Year's?" And she said, "No." She said, "There are some new people who won't have anything, and I can't bear to wear any of them."
Whew.
Huh? She felt in order to know someone's feelings, you had to walk a mile in his shoes. Sister Ignatia, who worked with Dr. Bob and nearly 5,000 patients together, she said, "There is no spiritual angle. It's a spiritual program." That's what Dr. Bob would say. He had no time for idle chatter and would always make his point quite clear in as few words as possible. They called it defogging at St. Thomas Hospital. He had slogans: keep it simple, there are no musts in AA, the first one will get you, easy does it, first things first. Many of those came from Bob. When he explained easy does it, he said to Danny Kay, he said, "You know, Dan, many people coming into AA get the wrong idea of easy does it. And I hope you don't. It doesn't mean that you sit on your fanny, stay home from meetings, and let other people work the program for you. It doesn't mean you have an easy life without drinking. Easy doesn't mean you take it one day at a time." And he talked about the camel. He said, "God gives us just the load we are able to carry for that day. You know, the camel gets down on its knees in the morning and picks up the load. That's what we do in prayer in the morning. And at night, at the end of our day, we get down on our knees and the load comes off, just like the camel." When people struggled with whether they could drink or not, he'd tell them, "Go to the Mayflower Hotel, buy a bottle of whiskey, take a couple of good drinks, then cork the bottle. If you can stay there a couple more days without taking another drink, you don't need us." And then he had a way of saying things, and he'd say, "I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll keep some oats in the bin and some straw in the barn for you, because you're sure as hell gonna come back." He felt that the answers were there if you looked for them. People in the Old Testament were just like the people of this century, and they had the same problems. He wrote in the King School Bible, it is the hope of the King School group, whose property this is in the Bible, that this book may never cease to be a source of wisdom of something, humility and guidance, as when lived in the life of the Master. That book is out at King's School that meets every Wednesday. The inscription is out. About anonymity, something kind of interesting. The AA who hides his identity from his fellow AA by using only a given name violates the tradition just as much as the AA who permits his name to appear on the press in connection with matters pertaining to AA. The former is maintaining his anonymity above the level of press, radio, and films, and the latter is maintaining his anonymity below the level of press, radio, and films. Since our tradition on anonymity designates the exact level where the line should be held, it must be obvious to everyone who can read and understand the English language that to maintain anonymity at any other level is definitely a violation of this tradition. Let's talk about the ego for just a minute. He said, so with the question of anonymity, if we have a banner, that word, speaking of the surrender of the individual, the ego is emblazoned on it. Let us dwell thoughtfully on its full meaning and learn thereby to remain humble, modest, and ever conscious that we are eternally under divine direction. Keep it on a spiritual basis. If you keep principles above personalities and you're active in sharing your program with other people, it will work out. We're not saints. Before you mention anything about the man, you bring him over here with you. Dr. Bob did not like gossip in AA. In fact, in his last talk, which I'm going to play for you, he'll mention that. If the speaker does not, he struggled with tolerance. His character defect that he worked the hardest on was the fact he sometimes got intolerant. So he said, if the speaker does not say exactly what you think he ought to say, don't criticize. He may be saying exactly what the man in the back row needs to hear. Something that he said, you know how, you don't do this here in Sweden, I bet. Do you ever argue at your meetings or have any problems? Well, you're not, we did too. And here's what he said. Gentlemen, please, we're still members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's carry the principles of AA into these business meetings. You are servants of your group, here to take the ideas formulated by the committee. Let one man talk at a time, and let us conduct this meeting as a service to our fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that should be on the wall of most business meetings, huh? I don't think we can do anything very well in this world unless we practice it. We should practice acquiring the spirit of service. We should attempt to acquire some faith, which isn't easily done, especially for the person who has always been very materialistic, following the standards of society today. But I think faith can be acquired. It can be acquired slowly. It has to be cultivated. That was not easy for me, and I assume that it is difficult for everyone else. Poor Bob. Bill was having spiritual experiences all the time, and he wasn't doing a whole lot to earn them. I mean, here's Bob reading the Bible, praying, you know, Prince of 12-steppers, doing everything, and he had struggled to have a spiritual experience. He says about spiritual experience, it didn't last long. He had one, but he said, I had the most marvelous sense of peace, which transported me for a time. It was truly the peace that which passeth all understanding, and I shall never forget it. We are all after the same thing, and that's happiness. We want peace of mind. The trouble with us alcoholics was this. We demanded that the world give us happiness and peace of mind in just the particular way we wanted to get it, by the alcohol route. And we weren't successful. But when we take the time to find out some of the spiritual laws and familiarize ourselves with them and put them into practice, then we do get happiness and peace of mind. There seem to be some rules that we have to follow, but happiness and peace of mind are always here, open and free to everyone. Dr. Bob, you know, you think he would like be real religious. He wasn't. He read the Quran. He read Confucius. He even read a book on Voodooism, Confessions of St. Augustine and The Robe by Lloyd Douglas. The reading list that he would tell you to read if he was sponsoring you would be these books, For Sinners Only by A.J. Russell, The Greatest Thing in the World by Henry Drummond, Sermon on the Mount, Emmett Fox, The Upper Room, a Methodist publication, and probably As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. He felt that in distant centuries, the science of the mind would be so developed as to make possible contact between the living and the dead. You know, Bill was real psychic, too. You know, I don't know if you know. Do you know they were doing seances? Do you know that Bill had a spook room where he did the Ouija board? Have you ever heard of Saint Boniface? He was an old German saint in Germany in the, I don't know what century, but he talked to Bill. If you read the letters to Father Ed Dowling, who was Bill's spiritual sponsor, you'll see some of that correspondence. Dr. Bob said, when I operated under those conditions of prayer, I never made a move that wasn't right. He prayed not only for his understanding, but for different groups of people who requested him to pray. Bill Wilson said, I sort of depended on him to get me into heaven. Here's what he said about the ego that I like. He said, we have found it wise policy to hold to no glorification of the individual. Obviously, that is sound. Most of us will concede that when it came to the personal showdown of admitting our failures and deciding to surrender our will and our lives to Almighty God as we understood Him, we still had some sneaking ideas of personal justification and excuses. We had to discard them, but the ego of the alcoholic dies a hard death. Watch out for sponsor worship. You know anything about that? We've all seen the new member who stays sober for a time, largely through sponsor worship. Then maybe the sponsor gets drunk. And you know what usually happens? Left without a human prop, the new member gets drunk too. He has been glorifying an individual instead of following the program. Okay. This is about halo poisoning. It's about leadership. And it said, continue to take personal inventory, and when you're wrong, promptly admit it. That'll take care of any halo poisoning. The kitchen table was the AA church. Dr. Bob was all about keeping it simple. And Anne's going to die in 1949. And it says, it seems a pity Mrs. Smith's wonderful work could not have received the public recognition while she still lived, but she must have known the gratitude in the hearts of many people she had helped. Akron should always be proud of the AA movement, which was born there, and proud of the fine woman who did so much to foster that movement. I want to read to you a prayer that I'm leaving with you here. It comes off of the desk of Dr. Bob about humility. He could have never written the traditions. He was already humble. Perpetual quietness of heart. It is to have no trouble. It is never to be fretted or vexed, irritable or sore, to wonder at nothing that is done to me, to feel nothing done against me. It is to be at rest when nobody praises me, when I am blamed or despised. It is to have a blessed home in myself where I can go in and shut the door and kneel to my Father in secret and be at peace. As in a deep sea of calmness when all around and about is seeming trouble. There he is with his car. The older he got, the faster he drove him. I'm not going to be able to finish with the people that come and take care of him. But he did say about death, I'll be gone in a short time to meet my maker. For a while, and here's how he explained death. For a while you see the plane, and then you don't see it. That doesn't mean that it has disintegrated or disappeared. It has just found a new horizon. That's the way I feel about death. I will have found a new horizon. Memorial card. Oh, I have to say this real quick. In St. Louis, Cleveland is the first international. We passed the traditions. Dr. Bob is going to give his last talk. And in St. Louis, Bill turns the program over to us in 1955. But do you see that chair up there? He left an empty chair for his buddy, Dr. Bob, on stage. And now I would like you to listen to Dr. Bob's last words at that talk to us.
Friends in AA and of AA, I feel I would be very remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to welcome you here to Cleveland, not only to this meeting, but those that have already transpired. I hope very much that they have the presence of so many people, and the words that you have heard will prove an inspiration to you, not only to you, but may you be able to impart that inspiration to the boys and girls back home who are not fortunate enough to be able to come. In other words, we hope that your visit here has been both enjoyable and profitable. I get a big thrill looking over a vast sea of faces like this, with the feeling that possibly some small thing that I did a number of years ago played a small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all got the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months. My strength hasn't returned as I'd like, so my remarks will of necessity be very brief. But there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts in our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help that has been so beneficial to us, to our less fortunate brother. Thank you very much.
That's it. Thank you. Thanks.